time for the weekend kickoff with Phil Devine, Armando Vasquez, Ballpark Frank, and Big T Terrence. Start your weekend off with all the news on the gridiron, in the cage, and the ring, and anywhere else that sports is happening. The weekend kickoff is brought to you by Vegas Discount Nutrition, number one for all your nutrition and supplement needs, with multiple locations around the valley to serve you better. Now, here are the guys to kick off your weekend on ESPN Radio 1100, 100.9 FM.
And it is time. It is Saturday morning. That means it's time for the weekend kickoff here, ESPN Radio 1100, 100.9 FM. Brought to you by Vegas Discount Nutrition. Three locations now. Another one opening up soon. Then another one right after that, November the 1st. So that's why we say multiple locations there, because it's ever-growing, and I didn't want to have to change the open every time we turned around, because I'm a busy, busy man. And it is time now. Lots to get to here. Phil Devine, Armando Vasquez, I'm Ballpark Frank. Once again, Big T Terrence. He's busy wheeling and dealing and making those things happen, making even more locations for Vegas Discount Nutrition. And I think you guys have one opening up, what, the 22nd or something?
Absolutely.
Right around the corner next week?
Next Saturday, big weekend for Vegas Discount Nutrition. They got that grand opening at the new store over on Westlake Mead. So that should be a big event, too, actually. Got all those distributors coming down there, setting up booths. It's going to be a big party. Even a DJ, I believe, Frank. It's going to be wild. Damn, going to be potty. Going to be a potty.
Frank Frederick's going to be there? No.
You going to have Robin Black performing live out there?
Robin Black will be joining us today. I'm actually very excited about that. Robin Black, a former Canadian mixed martial artist. Actually, wait, let's be honest. Former Canadian pop star turned mixed martial artist, turned color commentator, analyst, does probably some of the greatest breakdowns for fights. He'll be joining us a little later. We got a lot of NFL to talk about.
Well, you know, the first thing I have to ask when we have him on.
What would that be?
Did you play hockey and did you fight there? Can you fight on skates?
I'm sure he was forced growing up to play hockey.
Really?
I think that's a requirement in Canada, is it not?
I'm pretty much sure it is, yeah. I think if you don't play hockey, they kick you out of the country.
Now, obviously, you're a big hockey fan, Frank. You're very excited. Hockey is back. Basketball is back as well, too. Baseball playoffs, Cubs. Today.
I have loved the baseball playoffs. There have been a lot of exciting games, even with the two sweeps in the American League in the first round. Most of the games were pretty exciting. So, yeah, I mean, again, I know a lot of people watch football and they don't watch baseball till the World Series. As Barry Bonds said years ago when he was doing all his home run stuff, when he was, better baseball through chemistry. If you're not
really?
Watching, if you're not watching, you're missing the show right now, because it's been some great baseball games.
Oh, sure have. The ALCS last night, game one, Indians won 2-0, 2-run home run from Francisco Lindor. Great pitching battle. It was a great game overall. And then two games later today, game two, obviously, between Cleveland and Toronto, and game one between the Dodgers and the Cubs. I mean, as a Chicago guy, the fact that the Cubs, not only are they still being talked about, but still actually performing at the level that they performed all year. Did you think that this would fade out, or you're not surprised?
I'm not surprised, because Madden is a great manager, and he's got them so level-handed and loose, and they got some playoff experience last year as well. So, I mean, this isn't new to him, and I'm thoroughly convinced that I think Theo Epstein made a deal with the devil years ago, because if he can bring the Red Sox and the Cubs potential World Series, come on, man. There's something fishy going on there. But
Dodgers are coming. Wait.
Now, seriously, right there, if Epstein, because you got to remember, with the Red Sox, they came back from 3-0, to beat the Yankees, then go on to win the World Series that year.
First time in 86 years for them.
First time in 86 years, and then it would be 108 years if he can get the Cubs to win. I mean, would he go down as the greatest GM in baseball history?
Is he not already?
I think he's already a Hall of Famer. That makes him first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, the guy is absolutely incredible, the team he's built. And then to bring in a guy like Madden, who knows how to deal with all these guys. I mean, they do crazy stuff on this team. They have pajama night where all the guys in the locker room and that, they wear their pajamas, and their Arietta always wears this thing with the footies and stuff like that. And I mean, they just do crazy off-the-wall stuff, but it keeps them all loose and it keeps them happy and humble. It's kind of funny, because my brother and my best friend are diehard Cubs fans. I mean, they've been living and dying with them for years and years and years, their whole lives. I'm not a diehard Cub fan. If they win, cool, I'm happy for them. But in a weird kind of roundabout way, I kind of don't want them to win it. Because if they win it,
you like that misery, don't you?
Well, then if they win it, then they become the Red Sox or somebody else again. Because if they win it once, there's a good chance they can win two or three in the next 4 or 5 years. They have such a great team and they're so young. Epstein is still the GM. What happened to the Red Sox? They went from being lovable to Red Sox Nation and everybody hating them.
I don't think they've ever been lovable. It's...
No.
I've always hated the Red Sox.
But that's because well, you're a Yankee fan. But when they didn't win for 86 years, people did love them. And, the poor Bill Buckner thing and this, that, and the other. They found ways to lose with the Cubs. It's Bartman and everything else. And Murphy the Billy Goat way back in 1945. All those stories are done if they win. You're not the lovable losers once you've won. And then you maybe win a couple down the road. Yeah, I'm not all for it.
All right.
You're from Chicago, Freddie.
But I understand. I understand where he's coming from with this. I do. As if I was from Chicago, would I be saying what he's saying? Absolutely not.
No,
but
of course
not. I understand.
But
his
again, but I
was.
But I'm not a Cub fan.
Yeah, yeah. But being from
are you
Chicago,
a White Sox fan?
No, I hate the White Sox. Can't stand the American League. They do that stupid DH thing. It's not even real baseball.
It's not real baseball. Okay.
You know,
I got you.
The league that had Babe Ruth has a designated hitter. So if Babe Ruth came around today, we'd never even know it because they wouldn't even play the guy.
Yeah.
Stupid.
You gotta let Armando know. Babe Ruth used to be a pitcher.
Oh, I know that Babe Ruth used to be a pitcher.
I know.
I'm shocked that you know that he was.
Actually won 99 games as a pitcher.
Yeah, no, he was actually.
I mean, he was a great pitcher.
He really was. He really was. Now, we're talking about the Cubs collapse, possibly, if that happens. I don't know if it will, but one team
Dodgers.
We've been. Stop it. Which I have to say, I got to say, the Dodgers,
come on.
I was surprised.
Clayton Kershaw coming in relief was amazing.
It was very impressive. That was a hell of a game, too.
But I was a little more impressed with Kenley Jansen coming in the seventh.
How do you think the ratings difference is going to be between the National League and the American League? Cleveland and Toronto versus the Dodgers and the Cubs.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. It's going to be a big difference.
Okay.
Like astronomical.
Yeah, it's gonna be big. I'm being a Yankee fan, being from New York, you know, the largest media outlet, I always just, it's the ratings are going to be horrible if the big teams aren't in there. I mean, yeah, you've got the Dodgers in there. They're from a big market. Chicago, big market. But Cleveland? Toronto?
Nobody even knew it. Cleveland had the best record by far in the Central this year, and nobody knew anything about them. Before the playoffs started, I was doing one of the shows on NBC Sports, and I said, Cleveland's like the unknown factor. Although they had a great record, they're never showing on TV. They're from Cleveland. All that people know is in Cleveland is LeBron James and the Cavaliers, and they only know the Cavaliers because LeBron James is there.
Hey, well,
now they also know Stipe now.
Stipe, come
I'm
on.
Telling you, Cleveland has got a different attitude these days. Well, right, they are a winning
right,
atmosphere.
They've become Believeland, yes. And we've mentioned that several times here, that Stipe is the one that actually started the winning ways. But most of the people on the street know LeBron James and the Cavaliers.
Yes.
Sad reality.
Then in Toronto,
the only reason that they're not talking about only Austin Matthews up there is because the Blue Jays are actually playing pretty good baseball now, and they have a shot to do something. But what Matthews did in his first game as a rookie, 4 goals.
Yes.
And that also shows how bad the team is, but they lose the game. They get Fredrickson, the goalie from the Ducks. They're supposed to have a big improvement, so that's the one thing they know they have, and then he gives up 5 goals in the opener. Crazy stuff going on in Toronto. But in Cleveland, it is crazy how everybody seems to be just riding that roller coaster and riding that wave of success. But yes, it actually did start in the UFC and MMA.
It did. It's Stipe. I mean,
a
lot of people forget, or a lot of people don't even, you know, follow the sport, but he was we got a champion, Cleveland. Like, God, when he won, man, I was really, and I've never met Stipe in person. I've done a few interviews with him here and there, but as far as met him in person, never have. Don't really know the type of person he is. I know based on what he does, he seems like he's a good guy. I mean, UFC heavyweight champion, still is a full-time firefighter with Cleveland. So this is a guy who actually cares about his community and does give back. But it's so nice to see. It really is. And it is nice to see the change of momentum and a city that has always been known. I mean, remember Major League? Cleveland Indians? We still suck. I mean, I hate this song.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, remember when they built their stadium, the mistake by the lake. I mean, everything about it. The lake catching on fire when things were going on. I mean, they've had some pretty bad times there.
Well, at least the Cleveland Browns are still the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. And that is heartbreaking because every week you think there's that possibility. Last week we knew it wasn't going to be much of a possibility with Brady coming back. But, I mean, with Terrell Pryor, Isaiah Crowell, this year, they actually...
what'd you think about him getting it, taking a couple back. Of snaps there, Frank? I'm sorry, excuse me.
He's done it a few times this year. He's had to. Yeah, look,
well,
what
this one he had to.
He had to. Like, that, what are you going to do right there? How does that work fantasy-wise, too? You got Terrell Pryor as a wide receiver. Next thing he's taking snaps. Yeah. Like, do you get the points for receiving? How does that, or for passing? What Terrell Pryor, I think in the last 3 weeks, has been the first receiver to throw, catch, run a ball into the end zone in the first couple of weeks. I'm waiting for him to throw and catch his own ball in the end zone.
Which can happen.
Which with his speed, a possibility. And if any time Cleveland's got a chance to win, it's this week against Tennessee. So against Tennessee's defense, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Terrell Pryor throwing and passing a catch.
You just jinxed him.
Well, you know, Big T, Terrence, is his favorite quarterback, number four. Yeah. The first completion he ever had in his career was to himself. It was a pass that was batted down. The difference is, as soon as he caught it, he went down like the wuss he is.
Oh,
whereas
stop.
Terrell Pryor, you know, he might actually catch it and run and do something with it.
Oh, stop.
It's just the facts. I'm just being honest here.
It's just the facts. And speaking of facts, okay, Thursday Night Football. Which one? Seriously, fourth quarter comes around. Are you just waiting for the Chargers to blow it?
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, seriously, I mean, are you just like, okay, is this where it's going to happen? Is it going to be here? Because there's no way they're going to end up winning this game. But they didn't blow it.
They didn't blow. I really thought it was over. I go, okay.
Are you in more shock that they won or more shocked that they didn't blow the game?
No, I was more shocked that they...
You know, I'll be honest with you. I was watching the game. I had a dinner that I had to go to up at the new SG up here where Sedona used to be. And we had that game on along with the baseball game. And I was watching it. And there was a couple Bronco fans there. And then there was also some Charger fans as well. And the Charger fans were like, oh, we're just going to blow this game. I'm like, no, because you guys have been watching it in passing. I've been actually watching it. No, the Broncos are the ones tonight that stink. Yeah. They're the ones that they're fumbling. They're turning it over. They're doing everything wrong. They're going to make sure that they don't come back and win this game this time. So I didn't have that feeling because it looked like the Broncos were like, you know, you guys have been so horrible and so miserable. Well, tonight we'll take that burden on you because we're going to be the team that absolutely sucks it up tonight. And that's exactly what they did.
I was definitely surprised. I definitely was.
I forget the guy's name there. The corner that hit Demaryius Thomas for that was a great play. Helmet right on the bombing. It was awesome.
So, yeah, and that was funny, too, because there was a Bronco fan there, and he's like, oh, I think he was down. I'm like, no, not even close. You were having a conversation. You saw it out of the corner of your eye. He's not even close to down. And then so the replay goes, yeah, watch it.
Never mind.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't down. Yeah, that's a fumble.
That was clearly a fumble. Stepping off of football real quickly, this past week, the news that I did not think we would be hearing came about. Dana White the other day on with Colin Cowherd lets the world know Ronda Rousey coming back. She will be fighting at UFC 207 here at the T-Mobile Arena against current bantamweight champion Amanda Nunes. What do you think, guys?
I'm happy. I'm glad she's back. But, I mean... Why is this such a big story? Okay.
Because it's Ronda Rousey.
Dana still says that Ronda's the biggest name in UFC.
She's the biggest draw.
Dana White is wrong.
Yeah.
Dana White is... Ronda Rousey...
I didn't
Rousey,
say he was right. Yeah. I just said Dana said.
Dana is wrong. And listen, you know, over the years, I've agreed with a lot of things Dana White says. I have disagreed with a lot more of the things Dana White has said. But he is wrong there. Now, Ronda Rousey, she is an amazing athlete.
Yeah.
She is water cooler talk. Ronda Rousey is the type of person that is drawing those eyes that are not MMA eyes. They're not fight eyes. These are not people who base their entire being on fighting. But people who have absolute hatred for MMA actually want to know what Ronda Rousey's doing. So Ronda is a big star.
And she opened up the MMA world to audiences that it never would have been before. When Ronda's doing the Ellen Show and doing talk shows and doing daytime TV stuff all over the place, they had no interest in anybody from MMA being there before. So she has opened it up to a whole different audience and made it even bigger.
Absolutely has. But it's not the biggest star in the UFC. The biggest star in the UFC is Conor McGregor. And we'll talk about him in a second because I just see Armando shaking his head. And
Stop with that.
There's so many times that you say stuff about Conor McGregor that I just want to slap you. Because I know it has nothing to do with any actual thought process that you're putting through. You have no backing for it. You just don't like him. And it's anything that involves Conor, you're like, I don't care.
It's not that I don't like him.
You don't like him.
I don't like the public and the way they treat him, the way he interacts. I don't like the way that go ahead, bring it up. Say it. Right.
So this past week, Conor McGregor was fined by the NSAC $150,000 for the incident, which involved throwing a bottle. We all know what happened at the UFC press conference leading up to his and Nate Diaz rematch. They got into a screaming match. Diaz walks away. Next thing you know, they're throwing bottles over the crowd and in front of people. Little girl got hit with a can. You know, rightfully so, Conor McGregor deserved a fine. No doubt about it. $150,000, a bit excessive, but that was the ruling that they put forward, so accept it.
And there was actually some talk that it could have been higher than that. They were talking about doing 10% of the purse, which would have been $300,000.
Yeah, it could have been worse.
It was also talk of as low as $25,000, so... But Conor not happy.
And he also could have been suspended. And it could have been a lot worse. It could have been, forget the money, they could have told him, hey, you can't fight here for 2 years. But here's the thing. Conor now says he won't fight here. And I think that's bad.
It's bad for Vegas.
It's not, bad for
Vegas. It's horrible for Vegas.
Why is it bad? Why?
Why?
What?
Because the
Have
Irish
you seen the people that come in here
up please, in droves. Please. They'll get the same amount of people here for something else.
No way.
Really?
Yes, they will.
Really?
Conor McGregor has been involved in the three top selling.
I understand that. But somebody else behind him will come.
Who?
It doesn't matter who.
Who's
somebody
gonna,
will.
Really?
Yes, really.
Have you seen some of the crowds that they've had at some of the events that they've had that Conor McGregor has not been in?
I think
part
we
of?
Have been there.
You're absolutely wrong.
No.
Conor McGregor fans follow him from Ireland.
I don't care if they come from wherever, the other side.
Listen, you know what? I don't care if they're coming from L.A. I don't care if they're coming from New York. Here's the thing. They're coming. And they're not coming for anyone else.
And they come and they spend money. Some other people's fans come and they just go to their rooms and they don't do anything else. These people come, they party, they spend a ton of money.
Okay. And again, let's be real. They said the same thing when Tyson was no longer fighting here. They said the same thing when De La Hoya was done. Said this. Now that Mayweather's gone, now, okay. And somebody will come and make up the difference.
And let me tell you something.
It may be a little drawback for a little while, but then it'll get back. It'll get fixed.
No, it won't. There'll
boxing, be some
boxing still isn't. You're sitting there talking about boxing.
Boxing is not
fixed since Tyson. Tyson's still the biggest draw. Still is.
Yeah, De La Hoya was. But again, Mayweather packed it. It's still going to happen.
Mayweather's retired too.
Mayweather's retired. But I'm saying somebody else will start to do it again.
Really? Because have you seen some of the crowds?
It will happen eventually. You lose a little for a little bit.
So McGregor not being here, it might take 4 years or so, and the city might suffer, but it'll happen eventually.
It'll be fine. There's plenty of things that
instead of having a card with Conor and then the guy that would be along there anyhow, Conor not being here means absolutely nothing.
It doesn't.
You have said some stupid things, Armando, but this takes the cake.
We have to take a break, and Armando, your mic is now off, so if you talk, no one's hearing you because that is just spewing absolute excrement. That is stupid.
You just made the city of Vegas 10% smarter by turning off his microphone.
I made my headache start to go away, too. All right. It is the weekend kickoff brought to you by Vegas Discount Nutrition. Each and every week, check them out. Three locations, a fourth on the way, a fifth right after that. When we come back, we'll talk to Robin Black, a little MMA talk. And Phil will tell you a little bit about his background, too. It's the weekend kickoff, ESPN Radio 1100, 100.9 FM. Vegas Discount Nutrition are the premier nutrition stores in Las Vegas. All of our superstores carry vitamins, supplements, proteins, and weight loss health food for all your supplement needs at below online and wholesale pricing. Vegas Discount Nutrition is the only wholesale outlet in the state, providing a massive $1 million inventory for you to choose from, all at 30 to 60% off retail prices. Our three superstores are the highest rated and most reviewed nutrition stores in the USA, according to Yelp and Facebook. The entire Vegas Discount Nutrition staff are certified nutritionists, knowledgeable, and friendly. They will help you with all your health, fitness, and supplement needs. If you're looking to lose weight, gain muscle, or just maintain a healthy body, come and see why all the professional athletes and entertainers shop here. Our number one goal is your 100% complete satisfaction. Stop in today to get your free samples and see why we are rated the number one nutrition stores in the USA. Visit any one of Vegas Discount Nutrition's three convenient superstore locations, Eastern and Silverado Ranch, 215 and Flamingo, or 215 in North Decatur. Welcome back. It is the Weekend Kickoff, ESPN Radio 1100, 100.9 FM, brought to you by Vegas Discount Nutrition. For all your nutrition needs, stop by one of their three locations, a fourth opening next weekend, and then the fifth one at the Fashion Show Mall, November. The Fashion Show Mall, that's what I said.
Okay. Yeah, the Fashion Show Mall, November 1st.
Don't even know the hell I'm saying anymore. Overnight is killing me here. All right, Phil, we have a special guest coming up here. No, I can turn you off again. You can be off the whole damn show.
Go ahead.
Back to Disneyland, you Mickey Mouse radio personality.
Go ahead. Make more ridiculous comments how Connor not wanting to fight in Vegas is not going to hurt the city.
Yeah. But, it's not. Stop. Joining
us right now, we have a Canadian MMA former fighter turned analyst, works with UFC.com. You've seen him on the Fight Network. It is Robin Black. Robin, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. It sounds like you guys are having fun over there.
We have fun every morning. It's kind of our job. We're supposed to we get paid to come in here and have a little fun. We talk a lot of fighting. We talk a lot of football. It's what we do.
I get paid to watch fights, if you can imagine that. Like, we better not forget to appreciate how lucky we are.
No, absolutely are. And actually, Robin, before we get into, I wanted to talk about Michael Bisping, Dan Henderson, the fight we had last weekend. But I'd actually like to talk about you first and your foray, so to say, into MMA. This wasn't always your career path, so to say. This wasn't what you were always doing. You used to actually be a rock star.
Well, I think D or E-list rock star would be in Canada, to would be a little more accurate. But yeah, I used to sing in a rock band and wear tight pants and nail polish and eye makeup and shake my booty and scream. It was super, super fun. But I'm one of those lucky guys. I was literally kind of looking around and going, why am I doing the thing that I'm second most passionate about? I want to analyze fighting. And to do that, I want to get in the cage. Started with once and then became twice. And then it was like, well, I got to win one. And then it became eight and nine different times and finally started to really understand the chess game and you know, the minutiae of fighting. And I did it really to understand it because it's my passion. Understand it on the highest level and figure out some of these mysteries and then share them with people. And that's what I do now.
I have to ask you something here. It's a two-part question. Number one, I'm the only hockey fan in this studio here. Being from Canada, have you ever sung O Canada at any of the hockey games? And did you like to fight when you had the skates on?
I'm the worst skater in the world, but I kind of like hockey's cool, but there's so much hockey and not enough fighting in it. So that's like my main complaint. But
take that, Frank.
My wife actually sung O Canada at a Leafs game before, and she's in musical theater here in Canada, so she sung O Canada at many of these sporting events. I haven't. I'm really a terrible singer. It was just a fluke that I was able to convince people to buy, you know, an album that I made screaming in tight pants.
Now, Robin, okay, most MMA analysts aren't crazy enough to get in the cage. I mean, they'll go and they'll work out, but you actually went in there and took some punishment. How did that come about? I mean, you say, okay, I want to know, but I want to learn the hard way. I want to go in there and learn what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's it to a large degree. You know, I just have this insatiable curiosity about understanding fighting and understanding how the highest level of combat happens and what works against untrained people. And then when you train somebody and you give them skills, once upon a time, nobody knew jiu-jitsu, so that's all you had to know. And then later, everybody understands these things. So where does that living organism that is fighting, where does it get to? And, you know, I'm not saying you can't properly analyze fighting without really fighting, but there's an element that you're missing. If you haven't felt the terror, if you haven't been discouraged from, you know, people will see guys and they'll say, why doesn't he just get in there? Well, his brain has been trained by his opponent for 12 minutes to stop moving forward. And if you haven't experienced those kinds of things, and if you haven't understood how incredibly hard it is to do things that seem easy in tight pants, in a cage, while tens of thousands of people are watching on TV, if you haven't experienced that, you're missing something when you analyze it. So I started it for that reason, and then I fell in love with the lifestyle. There's a real simplicity, but also a real selfishness of just being able to focus all of your energy on one goal, and I love doing that. But I hate getting kicked in the head, so I'm way happier getting paid to talk about this on television than I was getting paid to stand in there in my underpants getting kicked in the head.
Now, when you started training, now you mentioned, Robin, that music was a second passion of yours, that you had actually had the passion for martial arts before. What was it like, or what was your prior experience?
At seven, I started training Taekwondo, and I competed in it throughout all of high school. I'm a second degree black belt in Taekwondo, and I won all kinds of tournaments in Canada and loved doing it. And that really was sort of the defining thing of my life. That's how I shaped decision making. That's how I learned things, you know, through the martial arts. And it builds you into kind of who you are and your perspective of the world. And then you discover chicks and coke and beer and rock and roll, and you kind of get it's fun. It's an exciting decade of your life, but it takes you off track of who you are and what you're most interested in. And I got lucky to be able to kind of find the time to go back to training, start studying jiu-jitsu as well as restudying striking for 6 months, then a year, and then that was it. That was who I was for the rest of my life again.
When it comes to your fighting style, is there somebody that you emulate or that you take stuff off of? How would you describe your style?
I would describe my style as worse than everybody in the UFC except for CM Punk.
Okay.
But to be honest, now in my last fight, I really had an understanding of the game. So instead of going in there and overly taking risks or, you know, being fueled by emotion or whatever, it was just simple problem solving. This guy strikes really hard, especially with his right hand. We'll put him against the fence. We'll control the inside. And so it became much more cerebral. But I love to box. I love Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I love the whole game. I love every single element of every tiny battle and every psychological battle and everything that is fighting. And it shapes who I am and how I have my relationships and how I learn things and how, you know, I try to grow. It's the root of who I am. That's why talking about it on TV and showing people all these little secrets for me isn't just about showing somebody how someone slips the right hand. It's about showing somebody how you learn something, how you grow as a person, how you deal with fear, all of those things. It all comes together.
We're on with Robin Black right now. Robin, when you started training MMA, did you train with Sean Tompkins?
I did. I did. I trained with him, Mark Hominick, and Sam Stout, and Chris Wardeski, which were his guys.
Nice.
Mark and Chris mainly, because they were at Extreme Couture in Toronto, so I trained with them most every day. And you learned about skill and work, but Mark Hominick, for people that don't remember him, he's the guy who had the blob on his head when he fought Jose Aldo in Toronto.
Well,
Mark Hominick's work ethic was something. And I'd been around. I made a record with Bob Ezrin, who produced Pink Floyd, The Wall. Like, I'd been around great people, and I'd seen extreme work ethic, but I'd never really seen anything like this guy. Like, the single-mindedness of his work ethic. And he got that from Sean. So that's when I got to know Sean Tompkins and train with him. But I did a little training with Mark Bocek, who is an elite jiu-jitsu guy here. Quad Patrick, who's still in the UFC, he's one of the great fighters out of Canada. I learned a ton from him. So I got to be around, in my mid-30s, I got to be around some of the real greats of fighting here. And I wasn't at that level, and I never really reached that level. But they let me understand things, and I was fighting for the purpose of knowing what I was going to do is what I do today, which is show people. You know, people watch fighting, they want to hear about who's got what Twitter beef with what guy, and they want to hear, you know, they talk about marketability and the rankings and all this total nonsense. And to me, I was like, there's this beauty going on in these 15 to 25 minutes that people aren't talking about, and I'm going to show it to people.
You know, it's amazing to hear you talk like that and know that you basically started MMA and were fighting in MMA when this sport was kind of like the Wild West. It wasn't as structured as it is now. You mentioned Claude Patrick. I remember interviewing Claude years ago and him telling me a story how he spent 3 or 4 days in a hospital in a coma because of a promoter not paying him, and then there was being a robbery, and he got crazy yep. story. You know, like,
man, that was my first fight. That was the night of my first fight where I got experienced an incredible beating and went through it to get into the second round and really ended up winning the first round. But Claude, that night, that promoter, it was Freedom Fights was the name of the organization. It's going on 8 years ago now. My very first fight that night, Claude was put in a coma. People were attacked in that hotel room. He got tased and then clubbed down. And that's the environment I stepped into. That story that you're telling right now is the night of my first fight.
Crazy.
But that weekend, I also had Evan Tanner, former UFC champion, cornering my very best friend, Ian Daw, one of his best friends, and Joe Dirksen, who had 51 wins in mixed martial arts, kind of there as part of my team. So I was surrounded by these geniuses. It was the Wild West. It was wide open. It was scary. There was a lot of the unknown and unpredictable, but you also were able to get so close to the top level of knowledge. So that helped really, really was an amazing time for me. I'm glad Claude was fine because he's a brilliant guy. I learned so much training with that guy. And now he has a crazy, crazy story to pass around. And it was the promoter never ended up paying the lighting guys, which and their thing was owned by the Hells Angels, I believe. And so they came in looking for money. It wasn't there, and everybody took the beat down. And they were smart enough to tase Claude because he could have probably taken care of 4 or 5 of them.
Yeah, crazy.
It sounds like you've had a lot of experience with a lot of great guys, but if you had one dream matchup, somebody you could get in the cage with, whether you win or lose, but that you would just like the opportunity to throw down with them, who would it be?
That's a really, really tough question. The level is so high now. But in the early days, like, you know, it was Uriah Faber and Mark Hominick and, those types of guys, Cub Swanson, and those guys that made me look at fighting and go from just wanting to watch them to just wanting to experience it. So if I was going to get knocked unconscious by someone, I'd want it to be one of those guys.
Now, last week, Robin, we did have UFC 204 took place in England. Michael Bisping versus Dan Henderson. You did an amazing breakdown pre-fight. Post-fight, did it go the way you thought it would?
It went exactly the way that I thought it would. And you can't say that often, even when you put 40 or 50 hours to analysis on a fight. There's so many. The more you learn, the more variables come up. The more questions arise. Like, it's been the exciting thing about this journey of analyzing something so complex is you solve a small problem, you discover a truth, and it raises all of these new questions, which is what will allow it to be fascinating to me forever. But in this case, it was pretty close. Dan Henderson, we said in the breakdown, and that this is not revolutionary, most people know this, his right hand can knock you out with one shot. And Michael Bisping's energy level, his ability to manage energy, his anaerobic threshold, all of these things are so high that he'll burn you out. So Dan was going to look to knock you out with his right hand, which he almost did twice. And the rest of the time, he was going to need to save energy so that if he hadn't won the first 3 rounds, he would still be in it in round 5. And it basically played out exactly like that. Bisping will almost, I don't know if he'll ever get what he's due. He has the most wins in UFC history now. He's landed the most significant strikes in UFC history. He has second most amount of cage time. He's the UFC middleweight champion. He was the Ultimate Fighter winner. He beat Anderson Silva, and yet somehow we'll all still underappreciate him, especially in America. Americans don't like brash British people, I'll tell you that.
You are so right, and I'm going to tell you, Robin, it has to do with, and it's going to always be, people's perception from the Ultimate Fighter. It's they put that seed in the back of your brain that Michael Bisping is not a good guy. Look, there's a deaf guy on the show, and he's talking trash about him. He's just not a good guy. But listen, I've met Bisping, and I know, Frank, you've met him before, I know you are. And everybody here can say that Michael Bisping is a good dude.
Michael Bisping's an awesome dude and a talented guy and a crazy hard worker, and he's driven and he's talented. I mean, these are things that many of us admire in people. But you're right, that one Ultimate Fighter season, they taught us to have an opinion of him. There was somebody I saw recently. So everybody loves GSP, but GSP was an incredibly conservative fighter, right? And I saw recently somebody said, the reason I don't like Michael Bisping is because he talks like Conor McGregor but fights like GSP. Which I thought was pretty funny. Yeah. So Mike's brilliant. And that game plan of using that left switch kick to bash the arms, you don't know. He never got dropped again after round three, right? So he did take right hands, but they weren't as powerful. So you've tired Dan out a little bit, and you've smashed up that arm. You know, that switch kick that he kept going to where you do a little stutter step and then throw the left kick, it goes off the forearm of that right arm. It smashes that. So it's called trying to destroy the weapon. You know, the weapon is that right hand, so kick it. You know, and you're seeing a lot of guys. Limb destruction is what Bruce Lee called it. You're seeing a lot of people. That's an area that the game is starting to expand. And, you know, people may not appreciate that Michael Bisping won round 3, 4, and 5. But part of the explanation that he and his coaches know is because he kept kicking that arm with that kick. And that's brilliant. That's a level of – that's the kind of thing I admire when you're looking at fighting. And you see how cerebral, how brilliant it is, how it's a long play. You know, it's great if you knock a guy out with one punch, but if you can long play it to the wind, that's what makes Michael Bisping so good.
Okay, Robin, how did you have that score, just out of curiosity? And
I had Mike winning rounds 3, 4, and 5. And I get that when Dan Henderson is a beloved character and had such a great fight and dropped him a couple of times, and he had a pretty good round 5, people want to give it to him. Our natural bias to say, oh, man, let the old guy win one. But he didn't win round 5. So,
I don't think so either. But now, did the scoring of the knockdowns rounds, could there possibly been a 10-8 round anywhere there?
Yeah, and I think that would have been an interesting one. You imagine if that was a draw. You know, round 1 could certainly be a 10-8. People don't call them that often. But if you ask, Big John McCarthy, who runs a course, you know, one of the most respected courses on judging, he'll tell you that should be a 10-8 round. But then he may tell you that round 2 should have been a 10-10 round because Bisping was beating the crap out of him for 4 minutes, the best 4 minutes of the fight, and then he got dropped. So I think if you're going to be scoring properly in round 1, you might go score properly in round 2, in which case Mike would have still won the fight. But it was a great enough fight that, you know, for Dan to, it's a much more modern story if you were making a television program for the guy to almost get there in his last fight. It's an ending you'd actually believe on an HBO show. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Robin, now we were just talking about how Bisping doesn't get the respect he deserves, and I'm going to make it sound here like I'm disrespecting him. He had Dan Henderson. He got revenge for the loss that he had earlier, and they gave him Henderson, the 46-year-old man who's a shell of the fighter he used to be because he doesn't have the same cardio and is a one-trick pony now with just the right hand, basically. Mm-hmm. How would he really do against Gegard Mousasi, a healthy Chris Weidman, the rematch with Rockhold? I kind of thought that this was Dana White and the UFC giving him the opponent that he wanted first to kind of give him a great opportunity to hold the belt, through at least one fight.
I think that's a viable perspective for sure. I mean, shit, you saw how good Mousasi looked, you know, how do you beat that kind of clean, pure technique? I mean, for Mike to beat any of those guys. Now, he knocked out Luke Rockhold, and that was not a fluke. It was a carefully calculated engagement strategy for how to land his left hook, which is his best weapon. And you saw that in the breakdown, if you watched it, how he did that. It's not like he can't hurt these guys, but you got to believe if he's going to win these fights, it's winning round 3, 4, and 5 with that incredible anaerobic threshold and that phenomenal use of energy system expression and stuff. That's what makes him kind of the most special. And that's hard to do. You have to live through 2 rounds with Chris Weidman or Luke Rockhold or Gegard Mousasi or Jacare. You know, so I buy that. As much as I'm giving him all the credit he deserves, he's still, 37, 38 years old. He's blind in one eye. You know, he's done his. I don't see him dominating this for very long. I see him, you know, winning or losing the next 1 or 2 and then calling it a career. He's been the highest paid guy in the last 5 years, not including Ronda and Conor McGregor, with the number of fights that he had and so forth. If you Google Michael Bisping net worth, you get a shockingly high number. So he's very good on TV. So I think, you know, does he have 2 or 3 more fights? Maybe. I'd be blown away if there was more than that.
Now, you did it, Robin. You said the names. You said it, Ronda and Conor, the two biggest stars in the UFC. There's no doubt about it. News broke this week that we do have Ronda coming back by the end of the year. I know it's a little too early, but what are your, and I'm not asking for a breakdown, but what are your thoughts when you heard the fight about Ronda against Amanda?
Well, the first thought I had was that this is undoubtedly the best fight for her of the lot, because it's the most like the people that she beat. You know, talented, tough, rugged, good at striking or jiu-jitsu or wrestling. And Amanda Nunes' case, it's good at most of those things, but nothing extra special that's designed to beat Ronda. You know, when I did the Holly Holm breakdown, I predicted that she was going to knock out Ronda Rousey. And I even, there was a breakdown or two, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, or in the words of Michael Bisping, I guess I am, that she would strike out to distance. And all of her fights in the UFC home struck while backing up and retreating to maintain the size of the gap between the fighters, which allows you to set up a head kick. And so that's a bad fight for Ronda. It was a bad fight for Ronda, and it still is one. And Miesha Tate now has fought her twice and got better each time. She's a stronger fighter than she is. The myth of Ronda Rousey has been dissipated. Miesha's a tough fight. I think this is the, quote, easiest fight for her. But at the same time, we have no idea what the year has looked like for her. Has she been in a lab secretly developing even higher level skills? Because if so, wow, Ronda Rousey. If she's been, you know, when she lost the world championships before she was an MMA fighter in judo, one of her coaches said she kind of fell off the truck a little bit, started taking pills, had depression, and we've seen evidence of that this time. So if she spent the last 10 months just hanging out with her boyfriend and partying and stuff, there's no evidence necessarily that that's the case, but if she has, she's in a lot of trouble, because 10 weeks is only enough time to kind of, quote, get in shape. And that's not enough anymore. You have to spend those 10 months improving and growing as an athlete and a person. So there's a lot left to be determined. You know, we'll start seeing her now, which is good. You know, it's not a bodybuilding contest. It's not about who's in shape. But I can look at your body and tell how much work you have or haven't done in the last while. And so there's going to be things like that to tell us. But it's going to be very interesting to see her back.
Yeah, we definitely are looking forward to it, even though we're probably not going to get Connor back here in Vegas. But
Armando
doesn't seem to think that's going to be a big deal, but I think it's going to hurt the economy a little bit, because those Irish fans love to travel. But listen, Robin, we are up against the clock. I really appreciate your time this morning. You've been very insightful. You've opened up our eyes to the world of fighting like we probably never would have had the opportunity to. I appreciate that very much.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that, man. That's my purpose here. And thanks, guys. Anytime at all. It's a real pleasure.
Hey, real quick, where can they find your stuff?
Follow me on Twitter, Robin Black MMA. I'm also using Snapchat, which is kind of weird and fun. It's the same thing. And my breakdowns are on the UFC YouTube channel, and subscribe to the Fight Network YouTube channel. I got about 15 pieces a week go up there.
Nice.
All right, and next time you come here to Vegas to cover a fight, come into the studio and be sure to smack Armando upside the head for the stupid stuff he says.
One hundo. I will see you guys there.
Love it, Robin. Thank you
Take
so
care,
much.
Buddy. Thank you.
All right, it is the weekend kickoff, brought to you by Vegas Discount Nutrition, ESPN Radio 1100, 100.9 FM. When we come back, we'll talk a little NFL and what's going on this weekend.
Vegas Discount Nutrition are the premier nutrition stores in Las Vegas. All of our superstores carry vitamins, supplements, proteins, and weight loss health food for all your supplement needs at below online and wholesale pricing. Vegas Discount Nutrition is the only wholesale outlet in the state, providing a massive $1 million inventory for you to choose from, all at 30 to 60% off retail prices. Our three superstores are the highest rated and most reviewed nutrition stores in the USA, according to Yelp and Facebook. The entire Vegas Discount Nutrition staff are certified nutritionist, knowledgeable, and friendly. They will help you with all your health, fitness, and supplement needs. If you're looking to lose weight, gain muscle, or just maintain a healthy body, come and see why all the professional athletes and entertainers shop here. Our number one goal is your 100% complete satisfaction. Stop in today to get your free samples and see why we are rated the number one nutrition stores in the USA. Visit any one of Vegas Discount Nutrition's three convenient superstore locations: Eastern and Silverado Ranch, 215 and Flamingo, or 215 in North Decatur.
Welcome back. Final go-around here. Weekend kickoff. ESPN Radio 1100, 100.9 FM. Brought to you by Vegas Discount Nutrition. Three locations, a fourth on the way. Next weekend, a fifth on the way. Right after that, November 1st at the Fashion Show Mall. For all your nutrition and supplement needs, check out Vegas Discount Nutrition. All right, guys, let's jump right into it here because we've only got a few minutes left. And time to talk a little NFL because I'm ready for some football.
I'm definitely ready for some football. We got some good college football today. Armando, I know Armando's excited about the Smurf turf. Yes.
And no one cares about the game he's excited about because Ohio State Wisconsin's the only game on the docket.
No, stop, stop.
Yeah, there's some pretty good games.
Come
Ohio
on.
Ohio State Wisconsin
Badgers
is the
are gonna
game.
Win. You know that, right?
Tennessee.
Would you like to bet on it? Huh? Put your money where your mouth is, Sparky.
I did bet on it, actually.
Yeah?
It's a parlay.
I like Tennessee, Alabama. I think that's going to be a good
game. I'm taking my 10 points and going with it.
Tennessee damn near lost to Appalachian State the first week of the season. They're not that good.
It's still going to be a good game.
Yeah,
it's going to be a good game. There's actually, we got a couple of good games
tomorrow. Did you see the sign of Tennessee last week? Said rocky top, more like rock bottom.
Why are you so negative, Frank? Come on.
I think it's because he's worked with you for so
because
many years.
But that might have something to do with it.
Because there's only one game this weekend.
No, listen.
Boise State's honoring the 2007 Fiesta Bowl win in Boise. It's awesome.
And I care why.
All right. There's actually, I got to be honest, if you look at the NFL, there's not many NFL games that I'm extremely excited about. We have two teams got a bye week this week. That's Minnesota, Tampa Bay. Minnesota, obviously, just rolling people.
Minnesota
like
probably does not want a bye week because they're
on
playing.
A roll. Absolutely. But I think the game I'm looking forward to most has got to be Cowboys. They're traveling to Lambeau, taking on the 3-1 Packers. Should be a good game. I mean, it's got, first off, you've got the storied history of both these franchises. They're both doing a lot better than I thought. Well, the Packers are doing what I thought, but I did not expect the Cowboys to be 4-1.
Nobody did with their third string quarterback at the start of the season.
And then you've got that right there. You've got the fact that the storied history of both these franchises, you've got the fact that they're both playing at a top level right now, and then you've got that drama that, oh no, Tony Romo's looming in the shadows. Will he? Do you put him back in?
Of course you do not.
See,
you don't.
I agree with you on that one, but Jerry Jones seems to think that that's not an issue.
Jerry Jones pays the bill, so he's
Jerry Jones has a man crush on Tony Romo.
He does.
He would like to have his illegitimate children.
Let me ask you a question, though. Do you think that the Cowboys can roll into Lambeau this weekend and win the game?
See, I don't, but at the same token, Green Bay hasn't been playing that great a ball lately. So, I think they're right for the taking. But again, I keep thinking that eventually Dak Prescott's going to act like a rookie quarterback. Eventually.
You mean like eventually he might throw an interception?
Eventually. Eventually it's got to happen,
game
right?
Six? I mean.
Eventually, but he hasn't yet, so you may as well roll with it.
I mean, we saw it last week. Carson Wentz, he threw, you know, one. He finally looked like a human being, yeah.
The game that I'm looking forward to, and I hate to say this out loud, but at the same token, because they are an enigma to me. This is a 4-1 Oakland Raiders. I can't figure this out. I'm
Oakland Raiders that stink, right, Armando?
You mean the Las Vegas Raiders?
I'm sorry. Yes. Let's. I don't know if we want to rehash that, but yeah.
This should be another one. This should be a very high scoring game. I mean, the Chiefs are coming off of a bye week and they're looking to rebound from an absolutely embarrassing showing against the Steelers on that Sunday night game. But and the Raiders defense still needs work. Okay? I actually have to, when I talk about the Saints, and the Saints have such a horrible defense.
Though you have a shot to win this week against Carolina.
We do. And look what Carolina's just not that good this year either. But, I mean, the Raiders' defense is actually a little worse. They are ranked last in the league in yards per game and passing yards allowed per game, while the Saints are only ranked last in the league in points allowed. They are 31st in yards allowed, 29th in passing yards allowed, and 26th in rushing yards allowed.
I cannot think 4-1 Phil.
Hey, and I'm not surprised because this is something I thought. This is, yes, it's a league of defense, and defense wins championships, but this is an offensive, it really is. This is an offensive juggernaut. And David Carr is doing excellent. He really is.
Oh. All right, we got about a minute and a half left, and I have to throw in this game as well.
Did I just say David Carr?
I think you did.
Yes,
yeah,
you did.
It's Derek Carr, but hey, you know, it's D Carr. Just call him D Carr. You can't go wrong. You'll rarely hear me say this, but I am hoping that the Patriots absolutely carve up the Bengals this weekend.
Wow.
And I'm not a big Tom Brady fan, but I hate Pac-Man Jones so much that I hope that Brady has 6 touchdown passes against them just because I can't stand him that much. But that also should be a pretty good game.
Yeah, it definitely should be. And you, Armando, you mentioned the New Orleans Panthers game. That should be a high-scoring event. Last week, these two teams met in Week 13, and it was like one of the games of the year. 41-38, Panthers won in New Orleans.
That's any update on Cam?
Cam is expected to play. Hey, and I got to say, I'm also looking forward to your former team, San Francisco 49ers. It looks like Chip Kelly is done with Blaine Gabbert. We are going to see Vegan Boy. We are going to see
here comes Colin.
Kaepernick. And Kaepernick's got a tall order going to Buffalo, taking on a defense that in the last 3 games has 6 interceptions, 12 sacks, and has not allowed 1 passing touchdown. Bills defense is looking sharp.
And if the 49ers have a big lead, he'll be the first quarterback to take a knee before and at the end of a game.
Stop.
Just the facts.
I'm just telling people
what the facts are. And the fact is, for all your discount nutrition supplement needs, go to Vegas Discount Nutrition. 3 locations. We'll talk to you next week. It's the Weekend Kickoff. ESPN Radio 1100, 100.9 FM. We're out. See you later. Bye.